This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. You are tuned in to The People Speak on BBS Radio Network. I am Sophia Ray, your host for this week. The People Speak invites audience participation during the show by calling in questions for our guests toll-free in U.S. and Canada at 1-888-429-5471. Listen to tonight's show by telephone at 716-748-0144 or by logging in at bbs.com, navigate to station 2, and click the listen icon. Embrace yourself for the unknown because our tonight's guest has nearly 20 years experience under his belt investigating, researching, and lecturing about the strange and unusual. He is an author of numerous books on the paranormal, UFOs, hauntings, mysterious creatures, and aliens, of course. He has been featured on Discovery Channel's television show, A Haunting, and World's Scariest Places, aired on ABC's network. And he's also appeared on countless radio interviews. Tonight, Mr. Chad Lewis brings us the strange and mysterious. Welcome to The People Speak, Chad. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yes, not a problem. I'm happy that you could make it tonight. Thank you. You know, I really enjoyed your book, The Wisconsin Rogue Guide to Mysterious Creatures. You really opened me up to a lot. I did not realize how mysterious Wisconsin was next door.
Well, that was the main goal of the book, not only to get people aware of some of the creatures and folklore and legends roaming the state, but also in hopes that people wouldn't take my word for it either way, that they would venture to these places on their own and determine for themselves whether or not they believe these creatures are real. So I really wanted it to be a part travel guide, you know, part folklore, where hopefully people will get out there and explore their own backyard.
Well, what about you? Do you feel that these mysterious creatures and all these folklores and the phenomena, the whole unknown, what do you feel about it? Is it real?
That varies for me by day, that after 20 some odd years of researching this and out in the field, that I feel like I'm left with more questions than answers, that every time I think I get a theory to explain away some of these things or solve them, I get a new case that puts me right back to square one. So for me, after 20 some years, you know, I'm still learning as well, that I don't know if these things are real or not. And I think that for me, that's part of the fun.
Well, did you have like an experience when you were little or anything that inspired you to become an investigator?
I blame my interest in the weird and unusual on my home state of Wisconsin, because in Wisconsin, not only do we have the UFO capital of the world, we have three different cities that all claim to be the UFO capital of the world.
No,
and one of which was not too far from my hometown. And that's how I got started in research, is I heard about all these UFO sightings happening. And I started investigating when I was in high school before leaving for college as to why people were seeing things in the sky that they could not explain.
You know, I can't explain it either, but I'm pretty sure there has to be something out there that can explain something.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think the answers are out there somewhere. Just and maybe, you know, we are getting closer, or some people feel we already have some answers. But, you know, in terms of my own personal beliefs, I'm still almost as baffled as I was 20 years ago. I have a lot more theories, and I've ruled out a few things, but, you know, I haven't explained any of them. Of course, no one has. I mean, we haven't seen someone with definitive proof that there are aliens out there, or maybe we have. Same with ghosts or sea serpents or, you know, cryptids, Bigfoot and the like. So all these things that remain a mystery after how many years of investigating them as a collective.
I wonder if the seasons has something to do with this, because I've noticed that in November, there is more sightings reported, usually around the time of November. Does that seem about right?
Well, we do see patterns throughout the year, and it varies on which phenomenon is we're researching. But yeah, we do see patterns that come and go as well. Also, what I think is very important is that now with the media, the mainstream media, the TV networks that have all these shows, I can see progress in certain areas that the TV focuses on. Like 10, 15 years ago, every show you turned on was about UFOs, alien abductions, and the like. And then it shifted to, you know, 5, 7 years ago, ghost stories and hauntings and poltergeists. And now it's kind of shifted to cryptozoology, you know, mysterious creatures, Bigfoot hunting and chupacabra shows. So that affects what reports I get as well, because that kind of shifts the interest in people and they report what they're interested in.
It makes me wonder about these reports coming in. You know, are people looking for attention, or are they actually reporting something they really did encounter? Because a lot of times, in your book, I believe it was the case number 25, if I'm not mistaken, you had a man who encountered the Bigfoot, and you had put the report, the police report. You know, in the police report, as I was reading it, just didn't seem right. It was like he called the Bigfoot a critter. Now, and he claims it was like 8 feet tall, but that's far from a critter, you know. So it was just like the wording wasn't placed right. It just didn't seem right.
Well, keep in mind a lot of these people, and the case you're referring to, he made it a point not to call it a Bigfoot creature because he wasn't quite sure what exactly it was. But keep in mind that a lot of these witnesses that have these reports, you know, they're, for a lot of them, they're thrown off. It may even have thrown off their entire belief systems when they see something that they can't explain, that shouldn't be real, that science says doesn't exist. Skeptics say it can exist, yet they're seeing it with their own eyes. Many of them are often, you know, thrown off for years at a time. So sometimes when people report things, you know, they're still almost in a state of panic or a state of excitement. And oftentimes what we'll find interviewing these people is that if they did make a police report, after having a few days to think about what they had seen and to clarify their thoughts, sometimes they will change a little bit in what they believe they had encountered.
I'm an open person, and so for myself, being an open person, people can find me strange, okay? So therefore, I look at it in a total different view. I see it like, you know, was that the normal at one time? Were these strange creatures actually a normal thing at one time? And we see it as not normal because they don't exist like they might have millions of years ago.
I believe that. I believe that in certain cultures, it seems more normal than others, especially here in America. When you talk about some of the native tribes, they're more open to the Bigfoot creatures and the Sasquatch and the Wendigo because they've had it for, you know, their entire history, and those beliefs have been passed down over and over and over. And it's just something that's ingrained in the society that these things exist. Other countries explain things differently as well. When I was in Ireland looking for the little people, the gnome, the wee folks, the fairies, the goblins, whatever name you want to place on them, I would often walk into a pub and ask where all the gnomes and fairies hang out, and they would ask me, which ones do I want to know about? Whereas you go here in the United States to a bar and ask where all the gnomes and goblins hang out, and you'll probably get thrown out.
Or beat up.
Yes, or maybe both, yes. So it shows that there's a difference in the culture on how they perceive these things, and it could be that some cultures are just used to it because they've encountered them for so long, it's just secondary to their culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree with that. For those who are just tuning in to The People Speak, we are live with Chad Lewis on BBS Network. We're discussing the strange and unusual, aliens, Bigfoots, you name it. If anybody out there listening has an experience and they want to share or have any questions for our guests, please feel free and call in. You can call in at 1-888-429-5471. Going back to what we were saying, I do really believe that, you know, the strange and unusual is actually more normal than we really we can really tell at the moment. But the thing is that we lack the words or the language to explain it. Would you agree?
There seems to be something innate about our ability to, you know, sense that there's something more to what we can see and feel. But yet, yeah, you may be right. We just don't have the capability to express it.
I'm going to be honest here. I am not very versed in physics, but have you heard of the quarks term?
Well, I'm not sure if I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's exotic matter.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yes.
And do you believe that this exotic matter has a connection with the phenomena that as far as the investigations and such you research with UFOs?
Well, one of the things I always say is that I try not to rule out any explanation, because when you're dealing with the weird, what's too weird? If people 50 years ago would have said, I don't know, people experiencing werewolf-type creatures, that's too weird. I'm not going to look into it. We wouldn't have the research we do today on it. So I'm always open, and people always ask, are you approaching these things more as a scientific basis or more of a spiritual basis or religious or new age? And I say, I try to incorporate all of it just for the fact that I'm not sure what explanation may pan out. You know, I'm not going into these cases looking to debunk them or to prove their existence. I'm looking at to find the facts and letting that kind of guide me as to how to investigate.
So then that would be taking a scientific, you know, turn into these investigations then, right?
Well, as much as you can. Obviously, you can't recreate it in a lab setting and try to verify your results. You can't. Oftentimes, there's extraneous variables that you can't control in these things. And most of the time, people who are having these experiences, there's no rhyme or reason to it. It's almost random that I get just as many reports from people who claim that they're skeptics who don't believe in any of this as I do from people who are open to it. So it doesn't seem as though, you know, belief is one thing that, you know, would knock you out of the running for these experiences.
You know, for something to be true, belief doesn't have to, there doesn't have to be a belief there. I feel that, what I'm feeling is that, you know, I'm going back to what you were saying, that we can't recreate it. Well, you know, when I think about the scientists, you know, of today that try to recreate the Big Bang, I think to myself, how in the hell are they going to try to recreate something that they never experienced or seen for themselves? But if we can see for ourselves, like, you know, a Bigfoot, a gnome, maybe, you know, an orb that fluctuates in color and size, how can we not recreate what we see? But how can these scientists recreate something that they have not experienced or seen, or that anybody of this planet could, you know, definitely say that they experienced, but try to recreate it?
And we're touching now on a great section of that. What we're doing today in a normal, everyday manner, me speaking with you from a long distance away, you hearing my voice, I mean, 200 years ago, they would have thought that was magic. And I don't know where technology is leading us, and it seems as though 200 years from now, it's really impossible to imagine what other discoveries we're going to find. But I agree with you that, you know, if we can't create something that people are seeing all the time, very difficult to wrap your mind around that they can recreate something that nobody had seen.
Exactly. And, you know, it touching on technology, you know, I think about this often. The technology we have today, would it seem reasonable that perhaps that the technology of today is creating phenomenal experiences?
Well, we know yes and no, I would think, with that. One is that people were having these experiences long before a lot of modern technology. I did a series of books on paranormal reports from the late 1800s, early 1900s, many of it before radio, obviously before television, before cell phones, computers, and people were still having weird experiences. I think two things with technology, and maybe one, it's increasing the frequency in which these things occur. It was certainly, you know, nobody worried about orbs back in the day, but there was spirit photography. But also, I think it's created an overwhelming supply of information that years ago, if you wanted to know about ghosts or UFOs, the only thing you could do was to buy a book or go to a lecture on it. And now anyone can go online and type in ghost photos and have more information than you could ever want. So I think maybe that technology is enhancing these things, or maybe it's shifting our brain somewhat where we actually are more or less open to these things.
What evidence have you found during all of your research throughout the years? Anything that you actually got your hands on?
Yes, that's a great question. And basically, I could answer it very quickly as very little. But then, you know, that's the skeptic in me. On the other hand, you know, I consider myself more as a folklorist now, that collecting these stories, investigating the reports. But oftentimes, what you'll have is nothing more than an eyewitness account, whether it's a UFO sighting or a ghost sighting or a sighting of some creature they can't identify. Usually it's happened in the past. Somebody calls you to report it. When you go to the site, the thing or things are gone. Usually there's no trace evidence left behind in terms of footprints or, you know, trace landing sites or any manifestation of the spirit. So a lot of it is nothing more than witness testimony. But then there are other cases where you're investigating crop formations where there's actually something left behind. Something caused this. So there is some type of proof that these things are happening, but it puts you no closer to the cause of them.
You are tuned in to The People Speak on BBS Radio. We are live with Chad Lewis, and Chad Lewis is discussing the paranormal unknown and his investigations on cases that he is working on. People want evidence. That's what people want. They want experience. They want evidence. What can you give them? They want, you know, they literally want it handed to them. And, you know, it makes me think a lot of times when we go searching for these things, it's not going to be found. And it's always happening to those who are seeming like, you know, they're unaware and you know, and it's just like, hey, I'm here, and it spooks them. Why is that?
I agree with you completely. People want evidence and they want you to solve things. I've had every once in a while I'll get someone that'll purchase a book, and then, you know, they'll write a review saying that, you know, they covered 50 monsters of Minnesota but didn't capture any of them. Well, you know, that's a difficult task to do. People are expecting that if you go out on a few Bigfoot expeditions that you should find fur, or you should be able to capture one. And I think, you know, that's just part of today, of that instant gratification that we all, you know, expect now. Everything has to be sudden, instantaneous. It has to be there. And I think sometimes it's unrealistic that somebody's going to go out and capture a Bigfoot creature, because if they exist, nobody's done it in several hundred years of reports that we have. And I think it's just unfair for people to, you know, expect evidence on all these things that humans, quite frankly, have been struggling with since the beginning of time.
Do you think these Bigfoot creatures and these mysterious-looking animals and whatnot are science experiments gone bad, and they just release them out in public?
Yeah, that's one of the theories out there, is that they were. Of course, when I was down in Puerto Rico researching the chupacabra, many of the residents there believed that the chupacabra was actually an experiment in our government. The U.S. government has a base there, and it was thought that they were released during a hurricane, that these were creatures that we actually created. Now, others have the theory that maybe some of these things are extraterrestrial beings, or their pet, if you will, or the like. And I just don't know. I get all these reports, and I try to sort fact from fiction, but I keep an open mind that maybe these things were genetically enhanced creatures that were once, you know, of this earth. Maybe they're not. I mean, you start to go down the list of possibilities of looking at extraterrestrial, interdimensional, ultra-terrestrial, you know, all these things where, you know, we have no proof to support them, but yet they seem to explain away some of the cases.
You mentioned hurricanes. Now, that's interesting, because a previous guest that I had on, in his book, he mentioned that hurricanes are not a natural. They're not natural. They're actually an unknown phenomenon. What do you know about that?
Well, one of an old colleague of mine, Mike Caulfield, many, many years ago, was doing TV shows about how the world governments were controlling weather, that not only could they make certain things happen, but they had the ability to stop them or to limit the damage that they did. And this was 20 years ago that he was talking to me about how he thought we were creating storms and creating weapons. And again, not to get too much into conspiracy theories here, but
oh, they love it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm open to all of it. That I think that we've been studying the weather for so long, we certainly must know how to, you know, at least in minor ways affect it, because we know that just it's heating up, the world is heating, and that you can affect it. But once you know that you can affect it, it's just a matter of refining how to do it.
How much electricity and energy are they using to manipulate the weather? Because electricity and energy is a phenomenon in itself. It is a living entity, whether we realize it or not, I believe, because electricity is matter. This is metaphysics facts, metaphysical facts, that electricity is energy, and energy is electricity, therefore it is matter, living. How much does that take to manipulate the weather?
Well, this is a bit out of my realm of expertise, but I would imagine that it would take, you know, it's quite sophisticated if you were to do something like that, that it would take a lot of resources and a lot of, you know, energy, quote unquote, to create and manipulate some of these things.
Yeah, it's just really interesting. As a, why would, you know, I know it's a little bit out of our, both of our realms here, but why would the government use that phenomena to as an attack mode? It just doesn't make sense, does it?
And again, it's, you know, possible that they're using it for the good. It's possible they're trying to weaponize it. You know, it may have reasonings beyond what we can even imagine if indeed they are doing that.
If it was for the good, then why the heck is Africa drying out? I don't get it. Okay, well, anyways, we are tuned into the People Speak. Let's take a break right now, Chad. I'm going to turn it over to our engineer, Don Newsome, and travel us into a break. Take it away, Don.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please. Give to the World Food Program.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
And we are back. I am Sophia Ray, your host on The People Speak on BBS Network, and we are live with Chad Lewis. Welcome back, Chad.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. We are going to get into some questions that some of the guests have here. They are asking us here. We have a Vector in Washington. Secret society books websites mention a real society that apparently the Germans in the 30s and 40s developed anti-gravity disc. That being said, the RFZ, are you familiar with any of these crafts? the Andrew media and all, you know, I think I know what he's talking about. There was, they had this this craft that, you know, it's kind of like a bell, and they took it off, and it was found later, I believe, too, like many, like decades later. Are you familiar with any of those things that the Germans may have created?
Yes, and it was thought that the Germans were reverse engineering some of this stuff from, you know, alien technology, or that they actually got it from alien technology. Of course, during the war, everyone was experiencing Foo Fighters, and we thought it was the enemy thought it was us, and pilots were seeing these strange balls of light that they called the Foo Fighters flying around them. So we knew the technology was out there, and some of the theories are that, you know, the Germans did have this, or they were pushed forward into researching this type of technology, and how far it's come today, I really don't know. But if they were working on this, you know, 80 years ago, you can imagine how they perfected that technology.
Well, some say that plasma TVs and such forth are alien technologies. What do you think about that?
Well, I think some of your listeners who are interested in this should pick up a book called The Day After Roswell by Colonel Corso, who he actually said that it was his job to reverse engineer a lot of the Roswell wreckage and put it into things we know today, like the laser and the microwave, and figure out how it worked and how they could form it into something that would benefit us. And of course, you know, read it if you want with a grain of salt. It's a very interesting read. And if this now deceased Colonel Corso is telling the truth, that we're certainly not the only country that would have collected some of this crashed material. You would assume that other countries have had crashes on their property as well.
Going on to our next question here, Buzzy in Virginia. Has the History Channel advised you that 9/11 truth is a taboo?
Have they advised
me? Yeah, well, see, we have a lot of 9/11 guests that just are so fascinated with the whole 9/11, they just can't let it go, right? But so they want to know, assuming that you researched the anomalies of 9/11, have you researched the anomaly, the phenomena of 9/11 at all?
Probably about as much as the average U.S. citizen, where, you know, I'm aware of all the theories, seen the documentaries, but, you know, is it an area that I've done extensive research? Certainly not.
What about, now, speaking of 9/11, you know, I know this is a little bit, you know, I don't know if it's off topic or not, but, you know, U.S. invaded Iraq for an ancient alien weapon, I believe, okay? And this ancient weapon is supposedly said that it could blow up planets, and that's how the Nephilims came to Earth. It's because this blue beam, it seems like, annihilated an ancient planet, and that's how the giants ended up on Earth. Have you heard of anything like that?
I haven't. Of course, I know of people that do study, you know, giants that were once here, and, you know, as close as I've come to researching that particular area is that, as I said, some of the books I had done on late 1800s, early 1900s, there are many cases around the U.S. where people, while developing their towns and their cities, would come across graves of giants. I have numerous stories of them finding graves, the bones of people that were said to be 10, 11 feet in height, so that, you know, these people were actually here. At least they have the bones to it. Now, many of your listeners will probably realize that the largest man ever, at least officially recorded, was Robert Wadlow down in Alton, Illinois, and he died just before being about 9 feet tall when he died, and he was still growing. So, you know, I'm fascinated by people who do research giants of the earth and that they were here at one time, but it's just something I haven't looked into at great depth.
Well, yeah, some claim that, you know, these giants come from, you know, another planet, and it seems like maybe certain amount of them got off the planet before the planet exploded or was annihilated. And if that was the case, you know, it makes me wonder what could have happened on that planet for, you know, their race to explode their planet and hide that technology and hide that weapon here. It's very interesting, and maybe a new search for you, huh?
And I think people that may think that's too far-fetched, that beings from another planet or another system would actually move to another planet, all they need to do is go into their Google News and to see that we're looking toward that as well, that, you know, our civilization and our planet, which by all means is probably an infant among others, you know, we're already looking into that possibility of putting up colonies in other places. So I don't think it's as far-fetched, even for those who are not open to the unexplained and, you know, supernatural, if you will. You can't help but to see what we're doing today and wonder, well, why couldn't others have done that?
Why? That's the question, is why are they seeking to put up new colonies other places? What's not being told to the public that they have to seek for that?
Yeah, that's the fascinating question, isn't it?
It is. Let's move on to Mike in California. What is the most concrete evidence you have scientifically verifiable of any phenomena, creature, paranormal issue that you have investigated?
Yes, again, that would be very limited, that we just don't have that physical evidence. We haven't captured, you know, outside of the alleged crashes of UFOs, we don't have that complete UFO that crashed in someone's yard and they videotaped it. We don't have evidence of the, you know, a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or whatever you want to call it. So, and that gets very frustrating. I've had colleagues of mine and other people say that you've been doing this 20-some years and by all purposes, you're not any closer to the truth. And for a lot of people, that is very frustrating. I know a lot of my colleagues have burned out over years and years of investigating this, never to, you know, have a personal experience or never find any what you would call definitive evidence. So I think that's one thing that's just lacking in the field, is we don't have that, and maybe we never will. I'm not sure.
In your book, you had wrote about one of your cases where a man had a one-on-one encounter with a ship that came into his yard, and a human-like alien came out of the ship, and they were cooking pancakes in the ship, and they gave him pancakes. Tell our viewers about that, if you will.
Yes, it happened in a small town in Wisconsin. Local farmer Joe Simonton woke up one day and he looked out into his backyard and he noticed this craft seemed to be hovering about 30 feet wide, 10 feet long, and, you know, it was shaped in a circle. It had little pipes all the way around the middle of it, like mufflers. And he actually was pretty brave. He walked out to the back of it where this thing sat down. And he saw what appeared to be an opening on the craft open up, and what he's described as a creature wearing tight spandex-like outfit got out, and he said it was a small Italian-looking man. He called it a man. He said it looked, dark skin, like they were just very small Italians. And there were a couple more on this craft, and this creature, this inhabitant, this being, whatever it was, got out and was carrying a jug. Now, without any type of verbal communication, whether it was ESP or telepathy, Simonton, the farmer, realized that they wanted water. So he grabbed the jug from this gentleman, if you will, and walked into his house, filled it with water. As he was walking back, he approached from an angle where he was able to see one of these creatures inside cooking what appeared to be pancakes on some type of flameless grill. And the creature that was outside noticed Simonton's interest in these pancakes and actually gave him several of these pancakes as a trade for the water. And they traded him the water, got in their ship, and took off. And meanwhile, Simonton had no idea, but the lines were lighting up at the police department of people reporting seeing a flying object over the area of Simonton's farm. And legend is, Simonton's passed away. He passed away before I even investigated this case. But legend is that he actually tasted one of those pancakes, said it was the worst tasting pancake he had ever had. Allegedly, he sent one in for analysis with the government, and some say it came back as nothing more than just your regular flour buckwheat of a pancake, where others say that really what they found is that this pancake was made of items not of this earth, and they covered up the real history of what had happened. And Simonton was flooded with calls from people that had seen the same thing. And he was just a normal, average gentleman, just a farmer. He dressed up as Santa Claus for the Chamber of Commerce during Christmas. And until the day he died, he said he wished he never would have reported this story because he received so much media attention because of what he had experienced.
I would have been too scared to eat the pancakes. I would have been too scared to go out there. That's a great story. I wish that guy was alive. I would love to get him on the show.
let's go to another question. Most people are like you, where they say, I don't know if I would go out there.
Yeah. Rob in the UK, you have studied many conspiracy theories and myths. Do you think any of what you study could be connected to the Hollow Earth conspiracy? Could the Hollow Earth theory connect many dots?
I'm actually just reading a book by a colleague of mine who wrote the introduction for my Van Meter Visitor book. Brad Steiger, Monsters Among Us, and one of the theories that he goes into is that some of these creatures are appearing, and they're natives of the Hollow Earth, that these things, whether by chance or by, you know, design, that they're able to come over here and interact with us and then leave. And that's one theory that would explain away why we don't have bodies of a lot of these creatures, that is because they're not actually physically of this earth.
Interesting. I'm not really too knowing about the whole. I did hear something. I heard that the aliens did dig out the hollow of the earth, the center of the earth, and the earth is supposed to be the spaceship. Have you heard anything like that?
I do have many, many, many reports of UFOs being seen coming in and out of water, bodies of water, and they appear to go through the water as though there's nothing there. It doesn't make a big splash, and they dive in, or when they come out, there's not a big uproar of water. It's as though they're just passing in and out, and many people believe that they have bases under the deep end of the earth, as you alluded to there, that's the reason they're using these bodies of water, because it really hides their bases. But, again, that's just one theory out there, and obviously we have no, concrete evidence to support that.
Well, they say that these ancient aliens created the pole, the Earth's pole, the north, which is one pole, the north pole and the south pole. It just goes straight through Earth, and the aliens had created this pole because it said that, Earth travels up and down its pole, okay? But it can travel off of its pole, but in space, it cannot travel up or down unless if it's on its pole. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, no. That's very interesting, though.
Mm-hmm. So it's like Earth, and so it's a phenomenon. I almost feel like that, we've been lied to completely about the whole entire solar system. I is reluctant to even get into this topic right now because it's almost so far-fetched that, it's really hard for people to wrap their head around this whole idea of how Earth travels. So on that note, I'm going to go to a next question, which is Alice in Ohio. What does Chad think of Mothman?
Yes, well, of course, Mothman, this giant bat-like creature that, you know, seemed to appear for several months in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and then it seemingly disappeared by all accounts. And I did a book not too long ago on a creature called the Van Meter Visitor, which was very similar to the Mothman. It appeared in 1903 in rural Iowa. It appeared to be coming out of an old abandoned coal mine, which many of your listeners, if they're familiar with the Mothman, will recognize that the Mothman was out in some old war bunkers, you know, some TNT bunkers. So these things tend to be in abandoned old industrial type places. This thing came out. It was described as being 8 foot tall with giant leather bat-like wings, and it had a horn on its head, and it could project a light. And, you know, one of the areas that I looked at with my co-authors, Kevin Lee Nelson and Noah Voss, is that these things may have been the same creatures as the Mothman, these large creatures. And, of course, many of your listeners probably have read the book, The Mothman Prophecies by John A. Keel, or, you know, maybe seen the movie with that the little-known actor Richard Gere. So people are familiar with the Mothman creature, but many people don't realize that there have been numerous accounts of these creatures all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Mothman is scary. That's a scary, scary creature. And the movie Jeepers Creepers, yeah, that's a Mothman one, right?
Yes, yes, very similar to what witnesses were seeing. Mm-hmm.
You think it's a Mothman in Wisconsin?
Well, there were reports of a colleague of mine, Linda Godfrey, had some reports of a strange bat-like creature of La Crosse, Wisconsin. A colleague of mine, Noah Voss, received a couple reports of a Mothman creature being seen in Minnesota and Minneapolis right before the collapse of the I-35W bridge that killed several people in Minnesota. And of course, you know, the Mothman was originally seen before the bridge collapse in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, where dozens of people died. And it was almost seen as these things might be a harbinger of death, that if you see them, that you or someone within the community was going to die, that they were either death itself or following or tracking death.
As a native Minnesotan, I never heard about the Mothman being seen at the 35W bridge. That's new to me.
Yes, I hadn't received any reports as well, but my colleague Noah Voss had received a couple of them of a creature in that area just not too long before the bridge did collapse there.
That's interesting. Very interesting. Let's go to another question here. I have a question coming in from Lewis in Arizona. Does a guest think extraterrestrials are friendly, neutral, hostile, or a mix of those towards humans?
Great question. Based on, you know, working with abductees, people who believe they've been abducted by these creatures, either against their will or willfully abducted, we seem to be getting a lot of reports of various types of creatures. Many of your listeners probably know of the grays, these large, almond-eyed, round head. You know, you see them on nearly every movie that came out, and they were the typical alien. But others report that these grays take great care in making sure that people don't feel harmed on the craft. Oftentimes, they'll tell people, don't worry, we're not going to hurt you. We're here because you gave us permission to be here. We're here to help you. And they often will fill abductees with these stories, whether they're true or they're just, you know, some type of ruse, but they'll say, we're here to help save your planet, or we're here to do this for the environment. And then there are other types of beings that are reported, mostly these reptilian beings, these large, you know, reptile-looking, dinosaur-looking creatures that alien researcher John Carpenter said reminded him of some frat boys out on the town for a night of drinking, that they don't seem to care with these abductees one way or the other, much like, you know, we would consider an ant. Like, when most people step on an ant, they're not being distraught for days on end because of what they had done. So it seems as though that we get a mix of all these creatures. If any of them are indeed real, we would expect that some would be friendly and some might not be so friendly.
What about humans? Are we friendly?
Exactly. Yeah, the same thing. You can only, you know, we think that because in order to be at the spot where they can get here and visit us, that they would have to be more advanced than we are today. And we think that technology being advanced in that field means the same as being advanced in, you know, emotional fields. And that may not necessarily be the truth.
Humans just might be the dumbest aliens in the galaxy, huh? Who knows, right? I mean, because I think we're really ignorant as a species as it is, because we're always denying and salting and you know, we're killing our planet, and it's like everybody is just, you know, sleepwalking. I mean, they're awake, but they're sleeping. Do you feel like that, you know, that everybody around you is just kind of like in a daze and they're just like, you know, sleeping as they're just going about their daily lives, or am I the only one?
Well, that brings up the old joke that the greatest evidence that there's intelligent life out there is that they haven't visited us. So,
I think,
you know, most people, I think it's changing a bit. I've noticed over the years I've done this that back in when I first started doing it, people couldn't believe that I was researching these topics. And now when I tell them that I research these topics, most people have a story either from them or a friend or a relative that they'd like to talk about.
Let's see. I think we have another question coming in here. And I think this one is, if I can get my computer to work right here, I can get some questions out to you. As far as, did you have any stories told to you about ancient folklores or anything growing up as a kid?
I did not. You know, I wasn't interested in any more so in ghosts or creatures than any other kids. You know, monsters I enjoyed, but it wasn't until, you know, I began studying, going off to study psychology at UW-Stout when I started interviewing people who have had UFO experiences. And I was originally interested in what it is about human perception and belief systems that would make one person believe in the strange and unusual and someone else would not. And I started lecturing on this at research symposiums, and people in the audience would come up and tell me the story that they've had. And they'd want help. They'd say, I saw something in the sky I couldn't explain, or I think my home's haunted. Could you help me investigate? And so it really went from me looking at what people are believing to what's causing these things.
We're cutting it. We're going to, it's almost end of the show here, and I have one last question. This one's coming in from Langley again, Buzzy. What are your views on Phil Schneider? The Dulce, Deep Underground Bass, etc.
Yeah, that's interesting as well. You know, these deep underground bases, and many believe that, you know, government has bases under there and that, you know, other beings have it as well. And there are many fascinating books. Nick Pope, a UK or British researcher, has written a book on underground bases and such. And there's a lot out there. You know, but for the average person out there, there's not a lot they can do to get close to some of this stuff. You know, with UFOs, you can watch the sky.
What about your views on Phil Schneider? How do you feel about him?
Well, I certainly don't know him personally and don't know enough of his research where I could comment. Is there some type of controversy?
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea, not at all. If there is,
one of my favorite things about doing all these shows and radio is that you learn so much. Like some of these things that I'd never heard of, people ask about a monster that I'd never heard of, and it gives an opportunity. You know, just tonight there are probably half a dozen other areas that I want to go and research a little bit more because it's just so fascinating.
It is fascinating. I love the unknown. How do you explain the unknown? Can you?
Great question. I've been struggling for 20-some years to explain the unknown, and you know, not to sound like a broken record, but I'm no closer to the truth than I was so many years ago.
You know, the truth. What is truth? What is the truth?
Yeah, I guess to be completely accurate, I would have to probably say the truth, plural, because I think there may be many truths, and there may be an infinite number of truths. And, you know, that's just opening up an entire area that, you know, we could fill 10 other shows on.
Would it be true that we are all energetic beings, that we're all energy and matter, and everything around us is part of an exotic matter, a dark matter, a light matter? It doesn't matter.
I would certainly agree with that. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, who knows, right? Somebody knows. There can't be a question in this world that cannot be answered. I think if we just keep trying to ask the appropriate questions, we will receive the appropriate answers. So as much as we ask and ask and find ways of asking, we will find different answers for all of the questions we have. Do you agree?
I certainly do, yes. And I think after doing this for so long, I have to hope and believe that. Otherwise, you know, it's a grim forecast.
You know, I want to know, when you go out on these legend trippers or these legend trippings, you know, these investigations, do you use any type of symbols or any mantras or anything to evoke an energy to bring forth a phenomena? Have you ever tried it at least? Or
yes, oftentimes I'll bring people in that have expertise in whether they're mediums or psychics or intuitives or people that are looking at the occult even. So I'll bring in tons of players, you know, to help facilitate that, and we've tried it with bringing skeptics in as well. So as I mentioned earlier, that there's really nothing that's off limits when I try to research it, because again, I have to ask myself, when you're researching the weird, what is too weird?
What is there anything, you know, what's normal? Let's ask that. Is there even a normal that exists anymore? Because I don't even think normal should even be in their vocabulary, because it really sets everybody apart.
Yeah, finding a normal, defining normal may be more difficult than defining the unknown.
Absolutely. That's a great thought to end this show tonight. Time is up, Chad, and you know, I had a great time with you. Thank you for being on. I appreciate, you know, if you get any more information, I would love to have you on again, especially if you got some evidence for us.
Well, thank you. Keep an eye out.
Yeah, absolutely. I have fun. Next week, tune in to Dr. Gladys McGarry. She's known as the International Mother of Holistic Medicine. I want to thank Don Newsom. I want to thank our producer, Mike Kim. And I would like to give a special thanks out to you, Chad Lewis, for taking time out and coming on the show again tonight. To our listeners, everybody have a good night and be nice to each other. Take it away, Don.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.